And on that honking horn, it's time for quintessential off-season college crosscast. I'm Ryan McDonald.
I'm Jake Nazar.
What's up? I'm Adam Epstein.
Hey, folks. How you doing? It's Erie Barrister.
And we're going to talk a little bit of the latest lacrosse news and have some fun along the way as well on this summertime edition of College Crosscast. You can tell we're getting far into the offseason when we're breaking this out as the music, so...
You held the Crosscast just way too long. just thoroughly unnecessary.
It was, but... It's off-season Crosscast. We got a chill mood. We're not doing any more techno music. We're getting mellow. It's some Mungo Jerry.
By the way, that honking horn was me. And you can expect several more of those over the course of this podcast.
Let's go.
Are you in transit, Adam, or you just by?
No, me? I'm sitting. My desk is by my window, and it overlooks a pretty busy intersection in the East Village. So it's just a normal fact of my life that honking horns are going off every 5 seconds.
Shout out Quartz.
Yep.
It could be worse. It could be the subway. Or the LIRR or Jersey Transit. That's what North has. Like,
you've never taken the Metro.
I'm just picturing Adam on New York subway giving hot takes on Skype. Everyone's like, "What is?"
Avoid subway as much as I possibly can. I walk to and from work. Luckily, I'm close enough that I'm able to do that. But yeah, the subway is not having a great month.
Oh yeah,
you'd be like that Verizon commercial with the phone interview over the phone. Because you're late, so you delivering your entertainment takes for Quartz via smartphone.
Adam, since we were talking about you right now, let's just real quick. We haven't had you here in a minute, it's almost a month away, but the Final Four championship game, and enjoyed it. I guess I'm assuming you watched it, right?
Yeah, I watched it.
No, I didn't know. You know, Memorial Day weekend, Hopkins wasn't in it. I did not
watch it with a smile on my face, and I would be lying to you if I said I enjoyed the game. I'm perfectly willing to admit that those were the two best teams in the country this year, and I'm glad that, you know, as much as I hate Maryland, that they're both repping the Big Ten. And ultimately, I think the best team won. I was saying all year that if Maryland wasn't going to do it this year, they were never going to do it. And they did it. So congrats to them. The 44 years is over. And now Hopkins has, 34 years left to win a title before they meet that.
24, right? Is it 35 or something like that? I was just going to say, there are 11-year-old kids right now who have never seen a Hopkins championship. So
they still have 30-plus years to win one before we're in Maryland territory.
God forbid.
you made the Final Four a couple of years ago, too, so you don't have to get into UNC has not made a Final Four since 1993 territory, so you're safe there, I guess, too.
Yeah.
And you don't have Virginia's ACC record.
You've won conference games.
Virginia's ACC record. One conference game in 5 years. One conference win in 5 years.
Dartmouth has done better. Shout out Ryan Dady.
Dartmouth.
So I guess let's talk a little bit of lacrosse. There's a couple news notes. This past week or so, the transfer wire is kind of the biggest hubbub since Michigan and St. Bonaventure made their moves. We'll discuss a little bit of the question because you guys haven't been around yet.
Ryan, just before you get to the transfer, I just want to say, love the St. Bonaventure podcast with you and Chris and Coach Randy Marins. I thought it was really great. I enjoyed all his takes. I didn't realize he was Canadian, and some really great stories there. So that was a really good show, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a lot of fun with Coach Mearns. Obviously, if you subscribe to us, you can listen to both the Coach Mearns interview we did last week as well as the Coach Holman interview last week. So highly recommend checking those out if you haven't already. On the transfer wire, and two big ones, it looks like. The biggest one, according to U.S. Lacrosse Magazine and Inside Lacrosse, Notre Dame attackman Ryder Garnsey is transferring from Notre Dame. It sounds like UVA is a team that a lot of sources have said he's heading towards, but due to ACC transfer rules, he would lose a year of eligibility and sit out a season if he had to do that. So no official word on when he's going or where yet, but from all indications, it looks like Garnsey's out of South Bend. Other transfer news, Johns Hopkins, as per Terry Foy and Inside Lacrosse, sophomore Drew Sapinski has been granted his release from Johns Hopkins. And there's one other one that's been kind of reported, but we're going to hold off, I think, yet that's been reporting today regarding Maryland. But if you guys want to chip in on that, that's fine. But the big one would be Garnsey, and that would be a big blow to Notre Dame's offense that was losing a lot already to begin with. Obviously, Notre Dame does have a lot of stud freshmen coming in, but that's still going to be a big issue to overcome, only made bigger with the loss of Garnsey if all that comes to fruition.
Also, Justin Schwenk, according to IL, he's poised to transfer to Virginia from Monmouth, so that's another one. But yeah, this ACC situation with Garnsey, it's quite interesting. I mean, I kind of knew a little bit of, you know, the transfer rules, I guess, pseudo non-compete clauses that these non-employees have to face in the ACC. But that's big. Yeah. You're essentially losing 2 years. Like, 1 year just not having to play, and then another year of your eligibility. So that's a big blow.
Yeah, you have 3 years instead of four. I would assume most conferences have that. I mean, it doesn't make it any right, but I think that's kind of the case in most conferences, as, you know, as screwing over the student-athlete as that is. But, I mean, unfortunately, the rules are the rules, even when they're stupid like that. I mean, we've heard a lot about this on the football and the basketball fronts of how stupid the transfer rules are and coaches, you know, preventing them to move to certain schools and stuff. We haven't really heard it that much on the lacrosse level until now, but yeah, I mean, just rehash everything that all of college sports internet's been saying by how stupid this is and how you're screwing over student athletes and everything. So apply to this as well.
Well, I mean, yeah, the rule is just utterly stupid. I mean, it's really hard to put into words just how stupid this is. I mean, it's like catastrophically ridiculous. That being said, the issue for Notre Dame with Garnsey would be that, you know, they do return, with Garnsey, they would have returned 80% of their scoring. So they would have brought a lot back on offense, albeit it was not a very good offense, but they would have brought back a lot on offense nonetheless. Losing Garnsey means they lose 20% of that scoring. So they go from 80% to 60%. 60% is still, you know, okay, but it's huge, and it means that they would lose their best attackman and their best midfielder. And Garnsey had about 30% of all of their assists last year. So, you know, Notre Dame was in position, even with how much their offense struggled, to bring back a lot. And with Garnsey gone, they're in a huge, predicament where, you know, they have a lot of talent coming in, but that talent would have to go from, you know, maybe taking a complimentary role early on to taking basically being the star of the show.
I think, I totally agree. I think that's a huge blow for Notre Dame. They are coming in with a big class. So, and freshmen have been contributing instantly, at least last year they did. But, I mean, losing a kid who's borderline All-American talent, you know, level kind of player, and who would have been your highest scoring returning starter. I mean, there's no way around it. That's just a big blow.
I was telling you guys this before, but maybe if there's a silver lining in this for Notre Dame, maybe it's that this forces them to sort of change up their offensive philosophy a little bit. I think that they've put out an offense that a lot of people have criticized the last couple of years. I think probably mostly because of the personnel that they have. But now that Guernsey's not there, they don't really have, you know, the classic ex-attackman like the quarterback attackman, Mikey Wynn's an off-ball, you know, crease sky finisher. And you know, Safe just said one of these freshmen could come in and run the offense. We saw with Mike Sowers and Jeff Teed and all those guys that freshmen are totally capable of running a D1 offense if they're good enough. So it should be interesting to see who that guy is for Notre Dame. They do have an excellent guy coming in named Colin Monroe from New Jersey. Is that who it is?
Connor Morin
from New Jersey. Monroe is the UNC recruit. So I think he's got a very quick path to the playing field. But as always, Notre Dame is a defensive-minded team. I expect they'll be just good enough on offense to be competitive in the ACC and to make the tournament. What really matters is if they can continue being as good as on defense as they have been.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the predictable with Notre Dame is that, you know, the offense for about 2 years there under Matt Kavanaugh, you know, sort of evolved and changed and became, you know, super explosive, and they ran a lot. And then Kavanaugh got hurt in 2016 and wasn't here in 2017, and then it just reverted back to pretty much what you saw from Notre Dame back in, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s, where, you know, it was just very slow. They only scored about, you know, I mean, 8 or 9 goals per game. I think they had just 10 this year. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Garnsey was, I guess, their closest, you know, like, path to being able to run a more, you know, explosive, up-tempo offense with the personnel they have, and now he's gone. Now, maybe one of these recruits coming in can spark it the way that Kavanaugh did, and that led to Notre Dame having some of their best years ever in 2014 and 2015. But if not, yeah, you know, they're stuck with, I guess, sort of the same rudimentary kind of offense that they had this past year.
So shout out to our boy Notre Dame at Atlanta. I know he's not taking the news too well.
Despondent.
But, yeah, exactly. But like I said, they'll be fine. But misery loves company, and Hopkins is losing a big guy as well, or at least according to IL. Yeah. And I love Drew. Drew's from Philly area. Like he contributed quite well for, you know, first half of the season. I thought it was a little bit ambitious that people thought he would be ready for this season. Like, even though, shout out to all the doctors out there, knee surgeries, especially ACLs, have been less of a career-ending injury than they were in the past, but it's still, even if you're, like, physically back, like, it still takes you probably, like, a full calendar year before you're just, like, back, you know, 95% of where you were pre-injury. So, I mean, we didn't see a lot of him this year. I didn't expect to see him a lot. Like, you know, if you lose him in conference play, April of 2016, like, he wouldn't have been, like, really, in my opinion, at least back to normal by until, like, you know, April of 2017. So, kind of, like, lose a year of his abilities. And, you know, I wish him the best. You know, I hate to see kids leave Hop, but, you know, obviously, these are children playing games for free for our entertainment. So I can't really get mad if they want to transfer. So I wish them the best wherever he lands.
I don't want to speculate too wildly about why a player transfers, but my assumption is that, you know, he worked his ass off to rehab his ACL in 9 months, and he wasn't even wearing a brace to start the season in February. He looked a full go. And he just ended up not playing. I don't know if, you know, if he just wasn't ready, if the coaching staff obviously didn't deem him, you know, fully back. I don't know if there were doctors in the equation saying that, you know, he probably shouldn't be given a full workload. But from his perspective, he must have been frustrated, you know, working all the way back so quickly and then not really seeing the field, not getting his starting spot back. So, you know, maybe he'll be given that at another school. I know he's also being rumored to go to Charlottesville and play for Lawrence Tiffany at UVA. I think that's actually a good fit for him. If he is healthy, I wish him the best. You know, hope he can salvage his career because he looked like a really, really promising player, and I was really excited about him. Then he had that devastating injury at Rutgers in 2016, and I was at that game, so I blame myself for everything that's happened thereafter.
I think he'll be reunited with his boy, Docs, if he ends up there. Again, this is just speculation, but that'll be a nice little lineup in Charlottesville.
All right, moving on.
Just want to say that if the Garnsey thing with UVA doesn't work out, there is an ex-attackman spot open in College Park, and I would welcome him with open arms.
I was just going to say, it reminded me of that scene from The King of New York. I was like, you can find Jim Delaney at the Plaza Hotel for anybody in the ACC that wants to come to a Big Ten team and play immediately.
On that note, I think we can report this, because this is public knowledge, that Maryland attackman Timmy Monahan is not on the 2018 roster that's been updated online. So if he's not back, that's another, I don't know if he was going to start this year, but that's another offensive player that's not going to be there.
Jake, you know him a little bit better than us, right? Like, he hasn't been on the field a lot, I guess.
I mean, he was really talented and highly touted at high school. I think he was, a top 10 recruit, maybe. But, well, top 20, 30-something. And he didn't see the field, I believe. He's a junior, rising junior now. So he didn't see the field in any part of his first 2 years. There was no guarantee. He was probably third on the depth chart. I can't even say he was third on the depth chart. I mean, in terms of guys coming back, he might have been third in terms of attackmen who would probably play next year behind Bernhardt and Lewis Dubik. If there was any, transfer coming in like Garnsey or maybe just anyone else, he probably would have slid further down. There's a couple, highly touted freshmen coming in on attack. So, it was crowded and he didn't see the field. And so, I can't blame him if he, just didn't see any path to playing the next 2 years and decided that he wanted to go elsewhere.
Why doesn't he play midfield? Maryland needs midfielders. And he was Gonzaga's career point scorer in high school, I think? Something like that. Broke records at Gonzaga High School.
He didn't play on the second midfield. If he wasn't playing on the second midfield, then he isn't going to take anyone's spot on the first midfield, considering the entire first midfield's coming back next year. I mean, there'll be a spot open because I think Bernhardt's going to attack. But that being said, for whatever reason, a couple freshmen, like Ethan Mincer was a freshman coming in this year, and he played on the second midfield. I guess he either got passed in the depth chart, something happened, I don't know. But, to my knowledge, I can't really recall seeing him on the field at any point this year, even when, it was a blowout and they put the, depth guys in.
Well, it's worth noting that his dad played baseball at Hopkins.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Nice.
That is.
So now we're going to learn about Big Ten transfer rules in about 2 weeks, is what you said.
No. I would be shocked if he went to Hopkins. But, like I said, worth noting. Factoid.
That probably played a little bit into Drew's situation as well. I mean, we're just so crowded at midfield. You know what I mean?
Alrighty, so given that you guys haven't been on in a while, we're going to talk a little bit about the coaching carousel and get your guys' takes, because it's been a while since you guys. So, let's talk coaching a little bit. Nothing really new to report on the head coaching side. A little bit of assistant coaching news. Harvard has got Justin Turry and Stephen Toomey on board as assistants in Harvard. And Matt Rukowski and Noah Fosner are going to be joining Ben DeLuca at Delaware. And also Travis Crane at Ohio State is now a full-time assistant. And one other one of note, Casey Powell is no longer going to be doing his coaching role at Jacksonville as assistant. I guess the beach lacrosse game was too profitable to
do for that. Get that money.
Get that money, Casey. Get it. We got no heat at all.
No heat. But I'm so still got that higher.
Shout out to our sources. We heard a couple of these a couple weeks ago. You guys maybe sell our tweets. Yeah. But
no worries. Jacksonville still has Galloway, so they're still set. just going to have Casey Powell just not doing full-time coaching anymore.
Yeah, I didn't hear the Casey one, though. That was a little bit of a shocker. But
one year, just, you know, that's it. Not for me.
Beach Across is the future.
Not about this life.
Wait, maybe he's going full-time trying to develop an actual lacrosse video game.
Yeah, maybe, like, he's just waiting for the floodgates to open with, like, NCAA licensing again once they finally rule on O'Bannon or something.
Get that money, Casey. We love you. Get it.
Team it up to with Gary Gate to take over all the lacrosse camps.
That would be amazing. and a little bit of the head coaching stuff also. UMass extended Cannella last week. I don't know if there was any whispers about him leaving. Because UMass has been a little bit up and down, but they always like get a nice scalp at least like once a year. You know, like they took out both North Carolina and Ohio State last year was, or two seasons ago, and then they, it's a tough CAA, but Coach Cannella seems to be, comfortable at least through 2020.
Yeah, that was scalped Hofstra this year.
That was really lame. UMass was a really good program before Cannella took over, and then it was a really good program for about like the first 10 to 15 years he was there. And they've just been generally kind of crappy for about the last like 7-8 years, with the exception of the one Will Manny year. And, you know, I don't know, like extending a coach, you know, for like 2 years or whatever after you went like 4-8 or 4-9 or whatever, or I don't know, whatever it was, is just kind of lame. But that's my take. Especially now, you know, with the CAA, like, you know, with Towson's got Natalin, is probably getting an extension, and Delaware hired Ben DeLuca. You know, and the CAA is loading up. Maybe Hofstra will get rid of Tierney at some point in the next half century. So,
but that's a big one. DeLuca at Delaware. I mean, the more I think about it, like since the news broke out, the more I think that's just like a phenomenal hire. I mean, I know we want to talk a little bit of assistance, but the head coaches are just so juicy to talk about. Like, I think him and the CAA, him and Natalin together, you know, that's a really powerful conference now with coaches, you know, so.
Is it, though?
Well, it's Natalin, DeLuca, and, like, everybody else.
I mean, nothing has really changed. It's Towson and then everybody else. It's not a great conference.
I mean, DeLuca will do really well there, I think. I mean, there's questions, you know, what's, you know, Ben DeLuca without Rob Pinnell, which is a worthy question asking. But I think he'll do great there, and I think Towson will have someone to, you know, butt heads with for the next couple of years. But until Hofstra decides to, like, actually, you know, take advantage of how good a job that could be, it's not going to be much. Beside those two teams.
It's all about Brian Volker at Drexel.
Another Hofstra.
Yes, this is my pitch, begging Hofstra, please fire Seth Tierney. I'm not even couching this anymore. Like, please. Please.
It was a disappointing
season. Jake! Like,
I think that's facts only, that it was a disappointing end to the season.
They were undefeated halfway through March.
But that's why it's disappointing. Are you disagreeing?
To be fair, didn't their season end on, like, really fluky, like, half-field goal to UMass?
Yeah, speaking of UMass, that's what I was talking about, like, scalping, like, that was a huge goal, because like that maybe changes everything. If they win the tournament, maybe Towson doesn't make it. Like, I love Towson.
They weren't beating Towson.
But there was going to be for sure. But you know what I mean? Like, that was, at the end of the day, the CAA was probably going to be a one conference league.
Yeah,
or one team conference. And if UMass doesn't get that like midfield last second shot to go in before overtime, maybe the Hofstra survives, and who knows, like in the championship game again. I love the captain, and I would put money on him, but you know, it would have left the door open as well. Getting
that being said,
they lost three out of their last four though. Including a loss of
my point. My point with Hofstra isn't just this year. It's that Hofstra, yeah, it's like this is a program in like the biggest hotbed in college lacrosse. that's got a super nice stadium, you know, which where people, you know, like love to go to. And they haven't made the tournament since, like, what, 2011? I mean, I think that was, like, the last time. So it's been, like, 6 years now without Hofstra making the tournament. And I don't think they've won a tournament game under Tierney either. So, like, this isn't just, like, this year where they went from, like, undefeated to, you know, whatever they finished and didn't make the tournament. I mean, this has been, like, 6 years in a row.
And usually they start off really well in February and March, and then CAA play comes in, and it's just like, what?
Yeah. It's just that job is too good to be missing a tournament like consistently.
I think they were good enough this year to earn Tierney another year to see if he can like string two good years together, but I get your point that, you know, it's reaching a boiling point there.
No, yeah, I mean they lost Josh Byrne, I think, but on that they've got like they do got some really good talent coming back, and I think they've got a really good recruiting class, too. So, I mean, yeah, like, they've got pieces in play where you could feasibly say, oh, let's see, you know, good class come back, let's not shake it up. But, I mean, like, please, just make one tournament. Just one. That's all I'm asking.
No, I mean, I get, and that's not too outlandish to say. Like, I would think, like, besides Baltimore, you know, if Towson didn't make the tournament 6 years in a row under Nadelin, like that, I mean, I think that it was legitimate to start asking some questions, you know?
Well, I mean, the last non-Towson team to make the tournament out of the CAA was Drexel. And even Drexel beat Hofstra in, like, I don't know, some overtime or something.
Oh, yeah, that was an overtime game, yep. And Hofstra was leading for most of that game, I think, too, and then they came back.
Yeah.
Because I was there covering that game, so...
Yeah, I remember that. And so, yeah, like, the last time, you know, it wasn't Towson, it was, you know, Drexel. And albeit that Drexel team got to the quarterfinals, but still, like, Hofstra had it right there, and they threw that away, and so, again, and then UMass did it in 2012, albeit UMass was, you know, undefeated for, like, in the entire season. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, if it was, like, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to, like, call for, you know, people to be fired just, like, recklessly, but, I mean, you know, I feel like college lacrosse has, like, slowly been moving along to the point where, like, athletic departments are demanding more and, like, you know, asking for, you know, like, some wins here and, you know, not just, like, not, like, paying attention and just, like, throwing it off to the side. And I feel like that's an example of someone still acting like it's, you know, 2000, you know, mid-2000s or whatever and just not paying attention that you've got something really with a lot of potential under your nose and you're not capitalizing on it.
I mean, Michigan fired their first coach ever after 4 years, you know? Like
after a winning season.
Yeah, first time they got in the top 20.
Okay, and given that this is the first time we've had everyone on since Conroy went to Michigan, everyone's agreed good move.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm happy, you know, I'm happy it happened because it made our report right, that's for sure. That was the hottest... DM session of all time. We were still like in flux. It was amazing. Like there was so much going on. We were calling sources, checking up, asking for comment. It was a lot. It was journalism 101 that morning. It was amazing. But I think it's a great call. Connery's like has a wealth of experience in the Maryland area. There's going to be a hotbed. Like you know, I love seeing the hop guy get another job. I think if you can't get, like, one of the gods and you can't get, like, an Ample or a Nadelin, getting a top assistant, I'm not discounting his contributions, but I probably would have thought, like, Brown or Coach Byrne from Matt Brown from Denver and Coach Byrne from Notre Dame would have been, like, my top two. But Connery was, like, my number three if you were going to look for assistants. Like, I thought, like I said, I thought that Michigan was going to go for the top guys it could get. Then, like, the best active young guys, coaches now, and then go, and then, like, their third stage would be, like, top assistants. And getting Connery is probably a great get, like, because I think, you know, Brown's probably maybe checking out Denver for a little while. You probably get up, and then Byrne should probably get the Notre Dame job if and when Corrigan leaves soon. So, like, this is, you know, the most gettable and best available assistant out there.
Honestly, I think, in my opinion, I think he's a better assistant than, I mean, a better assistant they could have hired than Brown or even Byrne. his defenses have performed better than Burns since he got to Maryland. You know, his track record is just as strong, if not, again, I think probably better. He's coached numerous All-Americans. He's a very good recruiter. He's got a track record before he got to Maryland when he was at Fairfield and actually turned their defense around. You know, he's more, you know, he's in the Big Ten, so that's, you know, a counter to, you know, Brown, Matt Brown at Denver. You know, he's, Connery's more plugged into, you know, what it takes to win in the Big Ten since he's done it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think if you ask me, they weren't going to, you know, things turned out that they weren't going to get, you know, the gods that it just wasn't in place for that to happen like maybe we thought. And they made a really, really good run at both Amplo and Nadlin. And, you know, I mean, they really made both of those guys say no. Like, it wasn't like, you know, they just asked and then whatever. I mean, they really made Amplo and Nadlin both say no, and it took, you know, very good situations for both Amplo and Nadlin to say no. And so then they moved on to what their number three guy was. Their number three guy was Connery, and I think Connery was a better choice for them than both Brown or Byrne were. I mean, I know those were the two highly touted guys, but I think he's just as good, if not better. And, you know, I don't know if this was their reasoning, but if you want to win the Big Ten, you've got to beat Maryland. And so, not a bad idea to go get a guy from Maryland.
Yeah. But for me, what this boils down to is Michigan needed a real defense with real defensemen, which they haven't had for their entire, you know, existence. And Kevin Connery will install a real defense, and he knows how to recruit good defensemen. So it may not be immediate, but he's going to get the defense turned around. And the theory is if the offense stays just decent, then they'll have two pretty good sides of the ball, and they'll be way more competitive. So I think it's a smart move.
All righty, shall we move on to some fun and games?
Yes.
Yeah, Adam.
Sure.
Yeah. Adam came up with a good idea of what we can do for like next season and stuff. Let's start off with. We already did very early top five teams, so let's do a little early player of the year candidates.
Wait, can we preface this by saying, yes, there are like the extremely obvious guys like Connor Fields, Pat Spencer, Ben Reeves, and Justin Gutterding. I think those are your top four obvious candidates.
And Trevor Baptiste.
And Trevor
Baptiste. Just because we know how this goes. Like, whoever was the ball.
Anybody who's been nominated before, who's returning, exactly. Is obviously an immediate candidate. Plus,
so we're going off the board?
Justin Gutterding.
Especially if you were going to be a senior. Like, Reeves, Fields, and Baptiste are already on the towards finalists for 2018. Yeah. Like, that's just how
it happens. I mean, I think it would be more interesting to talk about some, like, guys that aren't talked about as much that have legitimate chances of, you know, being in that discussion by the end of next year.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Well,
I'm going to go, I'll go first, I guess, for an off-the-board one, kind of. And I'm going to go off-the-board in terms of positions, because I'm going to go with a goalie to look out for. Hofstra's Jack Concannon. I've been high on him, but, if Hofstra actually, you know, puts together a year where they don't fall apart and everything, you're going to start hearing his name a lot more. He's been very good in net for the Pride in his first 3 years. He's going to be a senior next year. He's the game-changing guy that could definitely flip the script for Hofstra in the upcoming years. So if you want to look a little under the radar, look towards Jack Concannon in net for the Pride.
I'm going to go Connor Kelly, first team All-American last year. He scored 46 goals from the midfield last year, which is pretty darn impressive. He was even better and on a half of last year. You know, there'll be some questions. You know, obviously, he won't have Matt Rambo, you know, setting him up, but he is as good a shooter as there is in the entire country. He's maybe the best returning midfielder. You know, the two Syracuse guys are gone, so he might be the best returning. I think he's probably the best returning midfielder in the country. And I think he's a guy, if he can replicate what he did last year, maybe even better, maybe cross the 50-goal threshold from the midfield, I think he'd certainly be a guy to pay attention if you're the Tourette's on committee.
Adam, you want to go? Or I have
sure,
one.
Yeah. I got two. My first one is Grant Ament, Penn State. He led the team in points last year with 62. Very balanced attackman. Leads one of the best offenses in the country. They lose Nick Aponte, who was sort of, you know, the 1B to his 1A last year, or arguably vice versa. They kind of had two quarterback types, and with Aponte gone, they still have Mac O'Keefe. They still have a bunch of, you know, midfielders that can shoot. Amen's going to put up a ton of points. And as we'll talk about later, Penn State is one of my teams to look out for next year. So if the theory holds that Penn State is as good as they were this year, next year, or better, and Ament's, you know, can build on his great sophomore campaign, I think he's going to put up 80-plus points as a junior. That should put him in the discussion. The other guy is Ethan Walker from Denver. Kind of a similar situation. They're losing Connor Canizero, and he's going to be the guy in Denver this year. You could argue that, you know, a lot of his success was because Canizero took up a lot of the defense's attention, which is a very valid point. But I think Walker had a very quiet 72 points last year as a freshman. He actually led the team, even with Canizero on the team. So he's only going to take a step forward as a sophomore. Denver is going to be good as usual, so you know that he'll be in the discussion. And yeah, he's a slick lefty Canadian. He can shoot. He can pass. I think he's a guy that at the end of the next year, he'll become one of those like household attackman names, like one of the top five or six guys that everybody knows.
Did you have another one, Adam? Or
I mean, I could keep listing, but yeah, I'll
I'm sorry. I thought it was a Ment and somebody else. I'm missing one. Ryan, is the mic on?
Yes, your mic is on. Here comes the hot take, I'm guessing.
Jeff Teague. That's my
yes.
guy.
Yes. Yes.
Second only to Connor Fields in points per game. So he had more points per game than all the other. I mean, Baptiste is a special case on his own because he's a FOGO guy. But had more points per game than anybody else other than Connor Fields this year after starting the season kind of, you know, slowly, as some podcasts in March and February, shout out Chris can attest to. But I like Teed a lot. I think I know his situation in Cornell isn't ideal, losing their coach, but it appears like he's poised to have like a breakout season. Like we always know that like coaches or kids in their sophomore year kind of have like kind of like a big year, and he already had a huge year. Michael Sowers was going to be my number two, but I think T is going to benefit from that like Pat Spencer bounce in sophomore year. You know, a guy who didn't get more notoriety than he should and got it like kind of late, and he's going to get you know, it's going to kind of overcompensate for people missing out on him. I mean, not really missing out on him. He wasn't producing like he did towards the end of the season. But I think, like, you know, getting a guy like Milliman, who was you know, the assistant last year, so it's not like a totally different new coach and whole new system, is going to help him out. And the one thing people can't say about Kerwick is that he's a bad recruiter. Cornell's still going to have, like, you know, a nice class coming in, and, you know, the freshman class, including Teed, wasn't that bad at all. So I think he'll have a little bit of support. So Jeff Teed is my the dark horse for Tuards and finalists.
One other one that I want to throw out here. Remember, he missed out this season. Adam Charlamagne. Out of
Rome. He was me and Adam, both of us. So that was going to be our dark horse. I loved him. I thought he was going to blow up this year. Obviously, you know, had the injury. But
I think, you know, having seen all of Hopkins' knee injuries up close, I would be hesitant to like expect anything out of him next year, just because it's you know, it often takes
more than 1 year to get back to, you know, the way that he'd been playing. But yeah, he's a good pick, and if he's healthy, he can score 60 goals.
The one good thing, I mean, it's never a good thing for a player to get injured, but that injury probably happened in fall ball. They just kept it quiet, like no snitching through January, and then they announced it. So he's going to have at least, you know, he didn't have to, similar to like the Sapinski situation, or as opposed to the Sapinski situation where like the 1 year mark is going to be halfway through the 2018 season. Most likely, the 1 year mark for Shailen Bredy's injury is going to be in the fall or, you know, close to the new year. So he's, he'll have a little bit of fall ball practice to get back into shape instead of just also rehabbing at the same time, which I assume kind of happened to Sapinski.
All right, moving on.
That's a good take, Brian.
Wait. I got one more.
Drop it, Adam.
Joel Tinney. I'm out. That's it.
Put the air horns on.
I'm done.
All right, we're going to go now to early conference rankings. All three of you are going to say Big Ten, so we're moving on.
Big Ten. It is the best conference, Ryan.
That's just facts. Like, just facts.
It's not bragging if it's true. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're all agreeing Big Ten, ACC behind them. Then I guess, I don't know.
I'm not even sure about the ACC, to be quite honest.
But you have the Big East.
Wait. This is worth discussing.
No. But I know. I agree because
there's a lot of talent in the Ivy League, Ryan. That's all we're saying.
No, because
CAA, watch out.
No, but to Jake's point, he does have a point with the ACC, where Duke's a sure thing. Syracuse should still be solid because that's Syracuse, you know, even at their back end of the top 10. But there are question marks with UNC and Notre Dame and UVA. So that's actually a kind of valid point, I could see.
No, they'll still be the number two conference because I just don't see anyone really in the Big East besides Denver. I mean, that's really just kind of a one-team conference. With all due respect to Marquette, they weren't a really good team this year. It was really just impressive that they managed to pull off that run again. But yeah, I mean, the ACC, I mean, no, they're the number two conference because no one else has the depth. But, I mean, it is worth, you know, I mean, looking at, you know, Duke is far and away the best team in that conference. Syracuse loses, you know, their best scorers. They lose their best defenseman. They lose their goalie. I was really liking Notre Dame. I mean, I was, you know, thinking about Notre Dame maybe a preseason top five team, but with Garnsey gone, you know, lose Garrett Eppel too and Shane Dawes, who was great. There are some questions there, and I'm very much not high whatsoever on UNC and Virginia. So, you know, yeah, if we thought this year was, you know, a little shaky for the ACC, yeah, I'm not sure next year's going to be better. But every team's a title contender, I was told. So
all of them. Every single one.
Every single
one. Definitely Virginia.
Every year.
They can't win a conference game, but at a conference, look out. There's definitely no ACC teams in the NCAA tournament.
If their schedule was all out of conference, they'd be the best team in the country.
Wait, so they should just go independent then?
Why not?
That's what we're saying. I mean,
But then they can't be a title contender because they're not in the ACC.
Exactly, yeah. Right. They got to still be in the ACC without playing any ACC
teams.
So it's
a cash 22 for whoever said that. Who was that? Was that 19?
It's Sophie's choice.
No.
They're going to drop like 40 on Hopkins next year. I just know it from all I've been talking. But no. If we're going to go to number three, I guess let's just put ACC number two.
Yeah, number three is the interesting thing.
I guess Ivy League strikes back. That's mine.
Yeah, I'm going Ivy.
I think the Ivy's going to take a step forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, Yale's still going to be solid, even with Reeves leaving.
No, Reeves is back.
Oh, Reeves is back. That's right. He's a junior. Yeah, so Yale's still going to be very solid.
He's already on the Towerton list, remember?
Yeah. Yes. I lost my mind for a second.
I love Yale next year. I really love what Yale's got going on next year.
Yeah, Yale's got a really good thing going. Princeton's improving. Brown's was a lot more stabilized than I thought they would be last year with their situation. Obviously, losing Dylan Malloy is going to be an issue, but even still, they stabilized their program after a tumultuous offseason with losing Lars. Cornell's getting better. You got Jeff Teed and a lot of young guys there, so they should be improving. Harvard looks like they're improving a bit, too.
So, no, they're not. Just Harvard.
Penn was frisky for most of the year. You know, they
look at Harvard's roster.
It's not okay.
We do this every year. We do this every year. Every God's darn year, look at Harvard's roster.
No. That was my point. That was my point. My point is they don't have any seniors last year. Nobody's graduating. They bring back their entire team, and they're getting 9 top recruits in the top 100.
They always do.
No, they don't always get that good.
Oh, yes. Going back to when Tillman was there, Harvard recruited at a absurd level. And
point being, Morgan Cheek, senior.
Yeah, Cheek's phenomenal. No doubt.
But my point is, I think we can all agree, though, with the Ivy League top to bottom should be quite solid next year.
Believe in Harvard if their assistant coach last year was their coach. Like, the best coach on Harvard staff was Ben DeLuca, and he was the assistant.
I'm not saying they're going to win the championship. I just think they're going to be better than they were last year.
It's going to be a formidable conference. Even Penn, I'm just obviously
Penn's always
biased.
Frisky.
Yeah, Penn's always contender.
They beat Virginia twice, last year. So
Penn is the team that everybody is so high on. Quint ranked them top 10 going into this year.
Who?
Yeah, that was the
Quint,
hottest
thing.
Who top 10?
Penn. And he ranked them 10th to start the season.
I like Penn, but,
He was living high when they beat Virginia back in February. Nobody looked better than Quint at that time.
I mean, there's a couple teams that are a little bit overrated on some people's way too soon top 20s, but I think it's not a hot take to say, there's probably 4 Ivies that could be top 20 preseason. I mean, mostly in the 11 to 20 range outside of Yale, but still top
3.
20 on the
left. I go 3. I mean, all I'm asking from the Ivy is that Princeton doesn't give Michael Sowers the Tom Schreiber treatment. That's all. Just wasting a generational player's 4 years. Just please don't. I mean, you can make the tournament and lose, but please, just don't give them the Tom Schreiber treatment.
And schedule Syracuse.
Yeah, because I'll throw you a bone.
Well, they're losing Zach Currier, who
is a
game maker, game difference maker. So I'm not convinced. I think Princeton might take a small step back, even with Sowers in his sophomore year and things looking like they're, turning up a little bit for them. I don't think they're going to be as good next year.
I don't think the litmus test for Princeton should be the tournament. I think the litmus test should be how the young players improve. They've got Sowers, they've got, I think, Megalici on defense, who had a good year. They've got a couple other young guys on offense.
Simmons, right?
Sims is going to be a senior. So, yeah, I mean, a couple of the guys on offense are gone after this year. So, they've already, again, this is the story of Princeton for the last 7 years. They've wasted so much absurd talent. But again, for me, it's just how does the young talent improve? Is there no sophomore slump? If they all get better and they, the entire team, with the young talent all make steps, then you're looking at, a tournament team maybe 2019 and 2020. And that's, looking out for. I mean, I would love for them to make the tournament. I'd love to see Sowers in the tournament, but the goal for Princeton, or at least the way we judge Princeton, I don't think should be the tournaments, considering that, Madeline was not exactly put in a good situation with so many of his best players, leaving right away.
Let's move on then, kind of talking about that. Surprise teams. So one team that will disappoint, one team that will go out of nowhere. How will I anger Jake during this segment?
Oof. No, get
Who
it out of the way first.
Start?
Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Okay, team that will surprise.
Pleasant surprise, are we going first, or disappointing surprise?
Let's go disappointing surprise to get that hot take out off the bat.
I got one to fire off.
Yeah, let's go with Adam first. Adam's ready to pull the trigger. Go,
this,
Adam.
This isn't mine. I mean, this isn't my choice, but obviously Maryland is an obvious candidate. I mean, anything
I will fight
short,
all of you.
Anything short of them winning the championship, I think would be.
I will
whatever.
Fight
all, right. Anyway,
all of you.
Maryland is not my choice. I got a better one. Ohio State.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I agree.
All right, they lose Jake Withers. Boom. They lose Tom Carey. Boom. They lose Eric Fennell. Boom.
they were in the title game this year. Boom. They're not going to be in the title game next year. Boom. They're going to be a middling, you know, like 9-6 Big Ten team, maybe make the tournament next year, win maybe one game, but that's it. Boom. Ohio State. Boom. Down year. Boom.
I can agree with that.
That's a good one.
They lose five starters. Yeah, no, that's big.
I mean, I think they'll be better than, you know, like maybe 9-6. But yeah, I mean, I think that it's probably, you know, for if they get to the tournament, I think that that's a success for them, considering their, what they're losing.
Their big strengths were face-offs and a great D, and they lose their face-off guy and they lose their goalkeeper. Not that, like, they don't.
I mean, they do bring back Ben Randall. They do bring back Ben Randall.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Their defense will still be good. I'm more convinced that their offense and their face-offs will be able to, you know, hold par.
The one thing is, like, you know, if LeClaire can get a little bit of help and Jasinski, like, emerges, and just because they've been so good this year, maybe Myers is going to have another class. But, no, that's a pretty good take, not even that hot.
Mm-hmm. Nick Myers followed me on Twitter, so actually I should just take this back. I think they'll do great.
Run it back to the Final Four.
We're going all the way.
That's Jake Pleasant's surprise team for 2018.
All right, get your hot take out of the way, Ryan.
Okay. I guess I was going to think about Johns Hopkins, but Johns Hopkins, I think, is properly rated by everybody in, like, the 11 to 15 range, so that's not really going to be too much of it, although there are some worries, you know, with just guys, you know, being with academic issues.
I mean, what could be more disappointing than what happened this year?
Yeah, so like, Hopkins,
can it really
I think,
get worse?
Yeah, I mean, Hopkins, I think, is properly where they are. I'm going to say, given that we're still building them up so much when they still haven't really done much, I mean, I'm not saying for this podcast in general, but I'm saying as lacrosse in general, I guess Virginia. I mean, we're still expecting the world out of them because they've got a lot of high-powered offensive guys, and they got Lars Tiffany, but they still got to, you know, win an ACC game and, you know,
play
together
defense.
Yeah, they got to put things together. So I think some people are still expecting too much. I've seen UVA in a lot of top tens. Not really thinking that so far. So Virginia for the time being, until they can, you know, put together something, I'll put UVA in that disappointing range. Not for us personally, but I'm just saying I think the lacrosse field in general is still expecting a little bit too much for them, given that they've still got to, you know, take some baby steps and grow.
That was actually going to be mine as well, Ryan. Just for all the same reasons that you have listed. They may be getting some of these transfers who are all offensive-minded guys, but, you know, it was their defense that let them down. Again, they lost two games in overtime that, you know, maybe if you switch Notre Dame and Hopkins to wins, maybe they make the tournament. But there was a few times last season when they probably should have had the win. The Syracuse game wasn't in overtime, but that was another one-point loss. I think everyone gave them a lot of credit for losing one-point games, but, you know, it wasn't like a bunch, you know, shootout, and then they, you know, just were on the wrong end. These were games where they were in the lead. Like, the Hopkins and the Syracuse game, they had, you know, four or five goal leads, point lead, right? I don't exactly remember the Syracuse game, but I thought it was close to four or five. At Hopkins, they were up, like, six or seven. And then they, you know, gave them up. And then just the way they kind of finished the end of the season, yeah, they beat Robert Morris 13-7. But, you know, losing to Carolina, Duke, and then losing to Penn again, to finish up the season, you know, wasn't ideal. So I think just exactly how you put it, Ryan, not they're going to be disappointing in terms of, like, being entertaining to watch and stuff like that. But I think, like, the expectations that people kind of have won't match the results that by the end of the season. So they're going to be my disappointment. I don't think they're going to win. I don't think they're going to make the tournament next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're fourth or lower in the ACC.
I was going to go with Virginia, but, you know, both of y'all stole it, so I guess I got to change it up. I'm going to go North Carolina. I don't know if, you know, I mean, I think I've seen some with them, some, you know, preseason rankings with them ranked highly. seen some with them ranked more middle of the pack. But, you know, I mean, a lot of the scoring comes back, which is good, but they lose Goldstock, and they just lose, you know, key pieces in just a lot of places. Goldstock's gone to the attack. Tate Jezokas has gone short stick D-Mitty. Stephen Kelly's gone on faceoffs. First-team All-American Austin Pafani's gone on defense. You know, it's just guys that really, you know, key pieces and, you know, senior leaders, guys who have, you know, kind of held things together for them the last couple of years are all gone. And, you know, frankly, I don't think there's been a great Carolina team from February to May since Joey Sankey and Jimmy Bitter were there. I don't, you know, even when they won the tournament, they were not a great team the entire year. They certainly weren't a great team the entire year last year. So, you know, yeah, I think maybe people are expecting, you know, a Carolina turnaround, you know, or a top 10 team. I don't see that. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, maybe this is the year where, you know, all the luck just runs out that they've carried and they miss the tournament altogether.
Now, on the lighter side, better surprise, as in good surprise team.
I got one. I, if you guys aren't ready, I'll just fire it off.
Fire it.
Fire away.
The Johns Hopkins University.
Oh,
yes.
The Johns Hopkins University. Because on February 26th, I was about to write an article that this was the greatest Hopkins team I ever saw.
Oh, after God. Beat, better than the 2005 Carolina team?
Exactly. I was like, this is going to be, they're going to talk about this for the ages. I thought it was all coming together.
Paul Rabel and Jesse Schwartzman are not walking past that door.
Exactly. We had a whole new wave. It was hot. We were going to be, I thought it was, you know, then we lost the Princeton game and you know, the rest of the season didn't end up so well either. 1, 2, 3, 6. So we lost 6 of the last 10 games. But I've gone 180 degrees. From how I was when I was thinking maybe we might lose Petro and like the season was a lost season. And then I started thinking because like when you're in the hurricane, you don't really know what's going on because when we kept losing, it was so annoying. But like after the fog of war like clears out, we lost like minus the Duke game, we lost like, you know, 5 games the for the rest of regular season after the Princeton game where Hopkins lost 18-7 to unranked Princeton. So people forget that, you know, we got 187. Shout out to the Tigers. But of those games that we lost, those 5 regular season games we lost, there were 3 of them were to Final Four teams. Well, one of those games was we lost to Ohio State twice. So 4 of our losses were to Final Four teams, and our 5th loss was to the best team in the ACC, the Syracuse in overtime. In a game we probably should have won
was won by Johns Hopkins.
If Syracuse didn't, you know, for some reason we keep letting them bring their refs for these games at Homewood. But, Joel Tinney's goal was a goal. We should have won that game 8-6. That aside, but that's my point. Like, once you're out of the, you know, once you're out of the mix, or, everything calms down, the season's over, and I review it. The Duke game was a blowout, but, you know, when you lose your starting goalie the night before, it's not a great not a great sign, but I think they're going to bounce back. I think Hopkins is going to at least get to the Elite Eight, and they won't lose by double digits. And to me, that would be a very pleasant surprise. So Hopkins is going to be my bounce back team for 2018.
I don't know if I share your enthusiasm, Safe, but I will say this: they're getting Pat Foley back.
Yep.
And remember this name. Remember on June 28th, I gave you this name, Connor DeSimone. Remember the name. Remember the name. We'll be talking about him for a long time. That's all I got to say.
And our boy's 40.
He's 10%.
He's going to be coming through, so I'm excited. I think we're going to the Empire Strikes Back. Hopkins is going to come back next year.
All right. I guess I'll just go. I got one kind of hot take and then one lukewarm take.
Do it.
The lukewarm take, I alluded to this earlier, is Penn State. I think they're going to be really good next year. I think Tambroni sort of figured it out finally for them this year. And they ran into, you know, Nalen's death trap, or whatever we're calling it these days, in the playoffs. It wasn't a very good matchup for them. I think the defense will be improved next year. They showed some flashes of excellence towards the middle of the end of the year. You know, they suffocated Ohio State to death at home, 9-4. So they bring back Sabia. They bring back some other good defensemen. I already talked about Amen. They always have a good, you know, recruiting class. The Big Ten looks pretty wide open next year. You know, Rutgers coming back strong. Maryland, Ohio State losing a few guys. Hopkins. Michigan possibly going to be better, but, you know, may still take them a few years to start winning games in the conference. So Penn State, I think, is looking like a potential Final Four team. I have them in my preseason top five. So I'm expecting big things from them. And then my hotter take, staying local in the Baltimore area, is UMBC.
The MLL Factory!
That's a good one.
They were 6-8 last year in Ryan Morant's first year as head coach. They had a couple nice wins. They beat Stony Brook. They beat Binghamton. They beat Vermont. They looked competitive at Albany for a while.
Beat Marist?
They beat Marist. They only lost to Towson by two. You know, so they've been competitive against some pretty good programs. I think Ryan Moran has got this team on the right track. I'm not gonna say they're gonna make the playoffs, but I think, you know, a 500 record, an 8-7 type record is possible. And I think in a few years, after Albany has lost all their, you know, amazing players, after Connor Fields has graduated, and assuming they don't have another, you know, Connor Fields lined up in the pipeline, I think UMBC can, you know, put a little run together in the America East. So we'll see.
The captain has demonstrated that you can do quite well with a lot of guys from Baltimore County area with a chip on their shoulder who weren't recruited by other programs. So that's a good take.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna ride this train. Delaware.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Bring back their top scorer in Andrew Romagnoli, who had 53 points. Bring back their second top scorer, Charlie Kitchen, a freshman, who had 42 points. Bring back their fourth highest producing scorer, Joe Isley, a sophomore attackman, with 31 points. Bring back their entire starting attack. They do lose quite a bit the midfield. But, you know, this was a team who, I mean, beat Rutgers last year, beat a good Villanova team, beat a good Monmouth team. You know, kind of fell off towards the end of the year. But, you know, they were still competitive in some games, competitive against Hofstra. You know, their defense was good. It was the offense that couldn't really, you know, keep it up towards the end. And I think that offense is going to get better with that starting attack coming back. There was a lot of talent there that was left. And, you know, I think that Ben DeLuca is a guy who can get the most out of it. I would not be surprised at all if Delaware wins the CAA next year.
I'm also going to go a little bit mid-major. And it's a team that did well last year, but I think they can, you know, be a potential bid stealer. Binghamton. I think
that's a great one.
I think the Bearcats really do.
Losing Tom Moore.
They do, but I think they are definitely on the right direction. I think they're building something pretty good there in Binghamton, and I think it comes down to Coach McCown. I know he last year were like, it's not really that flashy of a hire. But he ended up being one of the best new coaches last year. And, you know, obviously we're not saying, okay, Binghamton's going to be a top 20 team in that sense. But they should be solid in America East play and, you know, could be a team that could pull off an upset against Albany in the America East tournament. And, you know, the America East below Albany's still kind of wide open. Stony Brook's still not, you know, looking like they're back to their early decade form. UMBC, I know Adam said, is his surprise team, but I think Binghamton might be that surprise team that could be a bid stealer come early May. So something to keep an eye on. And I guess we're contractually obligated to say Cleveland State because we had Coach Sheridan on the show. Thus, they'll be a surprise team in a good way as well.
I've got one more.
Yes.
Since we trashed the utter hell out of them when I wasn't on the podcast, Navy. They bring back a lot of their offense from last year.
They bring back a couple guys who had some injuries. You know, I'm forgetting his name. That's Casey Reese, who was their, you know, best returning guy. Freshman goalie who was great last year. You know, I think they had something going after 2016 that kind of fell off a bit due to injuries. I think Navy's going to be back. Maybe not, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they are right there with Loyola for that Patriot League AQ. I really like Navy next year.
I do think they're due for some positive regression. Casey Reese is immediately going to be their best player upon return. Assuming he's healthy, which is not always something you can assume with a devastating knee injury. They do lose a couple big-time defensemen, but it's hard seeing them being worse or having worse luck than they did last year. So I do think they're in for a rebound. Whether or not they can really go after Loyola in the Patriot League, I think is another question, but I agree that they're going to be better, at least.
Now, it's hard to imagine them being as bad as Ryan thinks they are.
Yeah, I would just like the record to show and all the brave midshipmen all around the world who are protecting us and our rights on just before July 4th. I did not actually make a Navy in my 2017. I would just like the podcast record to show that again. Mine was Rutgers.
So you're slandering me as un-American because of a lacrosse team's performance?
I'm not saying your...
Yes, I am doing that.
Your patriotism is in question, Ryan. I'm just saying my patriotism is on the right level where it needs to be, is all I'm saying. So.
Yes, and I am Chris slandering too. The patriotism.
Chris was also... I'm going to put Chris in that boat, so you're not alone in that boat.
I'm questioning the patriotism.
Chris was the one who opened the door. All right, yeah, what up, Chris? You did great in Nebraska, but I'm pretty sure he was the one who picked Navy, and then you kind of, like, okayed it.
Just tagged along.
All righty. Speaking of hot takes, let us conclude this segment with one hot take or bold prediction for the 2018 season.
I got a good one.
Here we go.
Fire it.
Virginia wins an ACC game.
Is it UNC?
What an accomplishment.
No, it's Cuse.
It
should have beat Cuse this year, too. But just one. Not two, just one.
just one.
Just one.
Improve the record to like 2-23.
Safe. Let's go to you next.
Just whatever hot take. Syracuse makes the Final Four.
Wow. What?
We want hot takes. That's what the people come here for.
You are a Syracuse fan. Just admit it.
They're going to be playing.
Everything out of your mouth the last, like, 3 months is, like, amazing Syracuse, like, compliments.
Like, you're more of a Syracuse homer than I am.
I value the duopoly brand that we have, and so I see no reason to, like, discount the fact that the Orange went 13-3 last year and just got caught up in the mix against the captain. You know, they probably should have made the Final Four this year, and this was a year that was supposed to be rebuilding. I got faith in Desco. I got no beef with that. Holler at me. Feel free to at me on Twitter. It's Erie_Barrister. So let's.
When that one goal game regression hits Syracuse next year, and they just start losing all of them, it is going to be something to behold.
It's going to be, but hopefully
just
it won't happen.
All of a sudden,
hopefully it won't happen. Game, says the lose. Hopkins guy. What is going on? I'm not hoping that Hopkins comes back against Princeton next year and wins 18-7 on the flip side.
And I'm the pragmatist on the show, and you're the, you know, that's your opinion. So,
okay, I have a double hot take.
Oh, dear. Which was the hot take that was supposed to piss me off? Like, I feel like we skipped that.
I know, what's going on here? But my double hot take... Neither the ACC or Big Ten get four teams into the tournament next year.
Well, we know the ACC is.
I mean, hit me out on it, because I think the ACC will likely be Duke, Syracuse, and one bubble team. The Big Ten, I think Penn State's solid, Maryland's solid, But then I think it's a little bit of a mishmash between Ohio State, Hopkins, and Rutgers.
Rutgers has got to get some luck at some point.
Yeah, I have a feeling like the three of them are going to be beating up each other a little bit too much to warrant a fourth, because I think, again, there's going to be a little bit more bid stealing, whether that's America East or Big East. I think the Ivy League might be solid enough to get two again, back to getting two in next year. So you guys
didn't like my hot take. I'm just going to kind of build on Ryan's. ACC is a two-team conference next year for the tournament.
Let's go.
They're a two-team conference. How about that?
I mean, I could see that being, like, possible, but that'll never actually happen because, you know, the media.
They'll just put them in anyway.
Yeah.
Notre Dame will get in because they're Notre Dame.
Notre Dame was literally one loss away from, like, maybe not even being, you know what I mean? If they lost that Marquette game, they could have probably maybe finished the season under 500. You know what I mean? Just with the increased pressure.
Notre Dame games that schedule, though. I mean, they game the hell out of that schedule. Yeah,
I think they're better. So that's my hot take. I think the ACC and the Big Ten, neither one of them gets four bids.
Did you have another one, or was that both of them in one?
That was both of them in one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I did say the Ivy League having two again, which is a little bit of a hot take as well.
That's quite warm. But they are going to be the number three conference next year, possibly number two on some people's lists.
Let's see. I feel like these aren't truly hot takes, but, you know, they're, I guess, maybe bold. I'm going to say Yale gets the Final Four. You know, they've really just found ways to lose NCAA tournament games in recent years. Whether it be against Syracuse in 2013 when they were up three goals with, you know, 5 minutes to go, whatever it was. Whether it was blowing a multi-goal lead against Maryland, losing a home game against Navy, not taking a timeout against Syracuse last year. It's been a litany. But they've got a lot coming back. They've got Reeves coming back. They've got some young talent coming back as well. They're always really good on defense. And yeah, I think Yale, this is the year where they put it together and they get back to championship weekend. And the second one is I'm going full homer. I don't know if this is bold, but Maryland's making the Final Four again because that's just what we do. And y'all have to catch up to this gold standard up here. Get on this level. Make the Final Four 4 years in a row.
All right, and because it's a summer, we like to digress. And we do have our entertainment guy in the house, and Adam. So it's a summer. Yo. So what's on our minds this summer?
Adam, I have a pointed question first, and then give us your general take. Is sure. Baby Driver going to be as great as I think it's going to be?
It's going to be great. I'm always, like, anytime a movie has, like, a unanimous, like, 100% score on Rotten Tomatoes, people, like, go into it thinking they're about to see the best movie they've ever seen. And I would, you know, caution people to not, like, totally inflate their expectations. But, yes, I do expect it to be very, very good.
I agree. I mean, I don't know if Ryan and Jake, have you saw the previews, or if I get a feeling it's still a little bit under the radar that, like, you know, if you're into, like, watching trailers and anticipating movies, like, that'll be, you know, you're excited for it. But I still think, like, not too many people know about it that much that it can still be, like, a sneak, you know, big hit. That and Dunkirk. I wish they didn't show the previews because I want to see that movie right now. You know, every time I see a preview, so I don't know if have you seen it? Have you seen either of those, Baby Driver or Dunkirk already? Or I always assume that you get, like, the inside scoop.
See a whole lot of movies in advance. It's more so TV shows. But I mean, I've seen the trailers for Dunkirk, and obviously I'm down for anything Christopher Nolan puts out. He's, like, the only, you know, ambitious studio director that's left. So
if they don't give Nolan his Oscar, I'm gonna. Like, at least a nomination. At least a nomination.
Yeah, if Suicide Squad ends up with more Oscars than Dunkirk, we're going to have issues.
We should just make Nolan our Matt Rambo.
In The Dark Knight.
We should make Nolan our Matt Rambo. and just like just keep talking about him until he gets his due.
Yeah, our Oscar season podcast is just going to be, hey, Christopher Nolan, you know who'd be proud of this offensive output by Penn State? Christopher Nolan. You know who would also be a stalwart on defense? Christopher Nolan. You know who's great at growing a program? Christopher Nolan.
The Dark Knight is my favorite movie of all time. Like, I'm not, like, lying. It is my favorite movie of all time. That being said, the fact, I understand I'm not impartial about this movie whatsoever. That said, the fact that, the one movie that won the Oscar that I'm totally forgetting. The fact that that movie won the Oscar
Crash. For
The Dark Knight that year.
Oh, no.
That was Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes, the fact Slumdog Millionaire
Who
won the Oscar
over
the
Dark Knight. Indian edition.
And it wasn't even nominated that year.
Nominated. I mean, the fact that it was. I'm still mad about this.
I understand I'm not impartial about this, but like, it blows my mind.
The Academy loves a good World War II historical epic, so. If he's ever going to get one, it'll be for Dunkirk.
You put a British guy as the lead, you're pretty much halfway there to get an Oscar nomination. Yeah. So now there's a bunch of them.
Heck, The Dark Knight might not even be this movie, which is Memento. And yet, like, that didn't get anything either.
Nobody knew who he was back then.
I am interested in Dunkirk, because we've had so many World War II movies based on the American perspective. It's been a while since we had one from the British perspective, which is going to be interesting.
They got two Nolan Batman alums with Scarecrow and Bane. Aren't they both in this one?
Yes, Cillian Murphy and Tom Hardy.
If Dunkirk doesn't win anything, what Nolan has to do is do a movie about making a movie, because nothing that or some sort of sex scandal in some institution.
I mean,
because those are the only two things that.
What's refreshing about him is he doesn't give a hoot about awards. He just wants to make like huge, like entertaining
monsters.
Films. Yeah, and like what I was saying before is there aren't that many people that are doing that within the studio system successfully anymore. It's always like
I think he
huge,
made me
like,
cry in Interstellar.
Oh yeah, I cried in Interstellar. My girlfriend.
I think he made
wept.
Me cry in Interstellar. That one scene where McConaughey is like crying with his daughter,
great.
Like I died.
That is great cinema, top to bottom. The docking scene where McConaughey's got to fly the ship and dock with the other ship that's spiraling out of control. And the music, Hans Zimmer's organ music is blast. Like that is just film. That's what film's all about.
And Adams Forte's TV. Any good summer TV you've been watching?
I love the Damon Lindelof articles, by the way, Adam. You crushed that. That was really good stuff with Leftovers.
Sorry, say that again.
Just your work and your articles about the Leftovers and the interview with Lindelof. It was just amazing stuff. I just wanted to say how much I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, so that was my favorite show of the spring. Obviously, Game of Thrones is coming back soon. I'm watching Glow on Netflix, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling comedy.
Oh yeah, I started that.
It's pretty funny. It's a good summer binge if you're looking for something sort of lighter and entertaining.
Jake would recommend watching WWE Raw and SmackDown, which actually has been decent.
No, I enjoy Glow for this reason as a wrestling fan, because The Wrestler, which came out in the Darren Aronofsky. With Mickey Rourke. That movie was really good, and it was really good because it showed everything that's terrible about wrestling. And like that's what made it really good, because there are a lot of terrible things about wrestling. Glow is really good, from my perspective, just as a wrestling fan, because it shows everything that's positive about it. And that's what I thought was kind of refreshing and very cool about it.
Agreed.
If you also
Although,
I'm trying to think what else is coming out in TV this summer.
I mean,
it's not going to be a great summer for TV. I think Game of Thrones is like the only big thing.
Started. And then I think Stranger Things season 2 starts this summer. I think on Netflix or is that
fall? On Halloween they pushed it to October.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's not even really any big streaming options this summer.
I mean, Netflix has shows coming out pretty much every week, like every other week. So I'm sure they'll have like something that'll come out that'll be, you know, an unexpected little hidden gem that people will like slowly catch on to. They have this show with Jason Bateman coming out in July.
I'm already hooked. What's it called? I just love Bateman.
Ozark? It's getting like some sort of Breaking Bad-esque comparisons. He's like, he relocates his family there, and it's like a crime drama with, it's like a darker, I'm not totally sure what it's about, but that looks interesting, at least.
Was Flaked a Netflix one, Adam? Or was that just a show that was on Netflix? You know what I mean? Like, did they
make... Yeah. That was a Netflix original. I never watched it, though.
I was going to say, I got into that, and I saw their War Machine movie with Pitt, which I thought was pretty cool. But,
yeah.
No, I'm excited for Game of Thrones. I think that that's going to be, obviously, like, the banger of the summer.
Yeah.
One show that I've seen getting a lot of takes this summer has been I'm Dying Up Here. It looks kind of meh, but Showtime's been pumping the hell out of it.
Yeah. Is that the comedian show, Adam? Yeah. I mean, Ryan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I got a little interested in that. I saw a couple of their previews. They looked not bad. Adam, have you got a preview of that or not?
I don't watch it.
And HBO really hasn't had anything this really until Thrones comes out either that's really been noteworthy as of late.
Well, Westworld was delayed till next year. HBO does have a new show coming out called The Deuce. It's David Simon, the creator of The Wire. It's about the birth of the porn industry in the 1970s in New York.
HBO is doing something that's basically just high quality porn.
So basically it's going to be as disappointing to everybody expecting something else as Masters of Sex, right?
Well, it's got David Simon, who's a legend. It's got...
He blocked Chris, Twitter.
Safe is good at... Love this. James Franco is playing twins. He's doing a dual role. So there's two
I just heard two great things. James Franco is going to be in a new one, and Jake was blocked by David Simon. Both at the same time.
I love The Wire, but, you know, like, screw you, David Simon.
What caused him to block you?
I think I...
Was it during the Baltimore riots, or...?
No, he was fine with that. I added him and told him how much of an idiot he was because he thought he could get away with saying the N-word.
Oh.
Like, I think that's what it was. Like, he thought, you know, because he made The Wire, that means, like, it was cool that he could say the N-word. And I'm like, no, dude. That's not how it works.
That's a worthy hill to die on, Jake. So I'm gonna support that. So.
I think it was.
We're just gonna move right along right after
right,
that.
going from entertainment to other sports besides lacrosse. It's not really okay. But like, baseball team. Still.
Let's ISO Adam and tell us why Leftovers season 3 was as great as I read you say that it was great.
All right, I could talk about this for hours, and I won't, obviously. I'll try and keep it very, very short. It's the most ambitious show on television. It tries things that other television shows would never, ever dare attempt, and it completely nails them. It's so smartly written. The performances, top to bottom, you know, everyone in the show is fantastic. It's extremely compelling. You know, it's mysterious. It doesn't, you know, set up mysteries that are never answered. Everything is logical and makes sense. It's, you know, extremely emotional and will make you feel all the feels. It, you know, spans several genres. It's a family drama. It's a, you know, fantasy, sci-fi, pseudo, you know, sort of thing. It's a thriller. It checks all the boxes. And, you know, ultimately it's just like the most compelling, fascinating watch on TV I've seen in a long time. It's not for everyone. I mean, it's extremely dark and, you know, emotionally difficult. But, you know, it's like totally rewarding for people who like stick with it and like finish and
are able to sort of reflect on its themes of grief and of family and love and all that kind of good stuff. Not to get too deep with it, but you know, it's a really effective show, and I recommend it. Anybody, I wouldn't binge it necessarily, because you know it's pretty heavy, and a lot of those episodes in a row could make you want to like jump off a building.
Oh my God, yes.
But you know, if you can stagger the episodes out a little bit, I think it's worth it.
I was just going to, because like I enjoyed The Leftovers. I'll put that out there. I haven't seen season three yet, but the first two seasons, especially the first season, like I love Andy Greenwald and Chris Ryan, and I kind of was in the Greenwald camp. Like the first season was really difficult to watch. Like I'm not an evangelical, but you know, faith is in my life, and just the uncomfortable feelings after every episode were so profound, especially season one. I thought season two was just a wonderful season in and of its own, and got away from like it, because season one really did hit you with like a sledgehammer, or if you were wearing a bulletproof vest and got shot. Any fans of the show will know where that comes from. But literally every episode it would hit you. And then season two, which is, I thought was just like an amazing season. I can't wait to binge season three.
Yeah, I will say that season three is much closer in like tone to season two than it is to season one. So I think you'll like it.
That's when they made their own stuff, right? Or you know this better than I, right? Wasn't season one directly from like the book?
So season one was basically just a straight adaptation of Tom Perrotta's book. And then seasons two and three, Perrotta is involved in the show. He's one of the writers. But he and the rest of the writers and the producers formed their own narrative after the book. So season two and three is all new stuff.
Nice.
Quickly, besides entertainment, there's also sports this summer. Baseball between the Mets, Orioles, and Phillies. We don't care at this point anymore. Correct or correct?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, plus one.
The best sports out now, probably motorsports. Jake and I always talk about how Formula One is much-watched television, if only for the pettiness of every single competitor in that series.
I was going to say, yeah, car racing or the NBA offseason.
The NBA offseason is better than the actual NBA season.
But motorsports... Or if you do, you don't enjoy Formula One because like there's like no passing. The pettiness of all those people involved is like amazing.
Yeah,
like,
you don't watch Formula One for the racing because it sucks. You watch it for how miserable every driver is, especially as Jake's gonna say.
The guy who's leading the championship series, like who like was about like in position to win, probably win the race. Decides that he's going to like turn into and try to wreck his rival in the middle of the race instead of just passing him. He decides to just totally turn in and try to wreck this guy, and then he gets a penalty for it, and he goes apoplectic on his radio and goes, "What did I do?"
and the guy ahead of him, Lewis Hamilton, this is Sebastian Vettel doing it. The guy ahead of him was already getting penalized for slowing up to try and take out Vettel. And that's not even getting into the best part of Formula One, Fernando freaking Alonso.
Yes, this guy, like, literally, I mean, spends his, like, his entire races, like, his the entire races, just totally shitting all over his team. Like, and his boss is like, it was a pretty terrible week for us. And straight-faced Alonso goes, I don't know, it was pretty good. Despite the fact their team and car is terrible. And he's just like, yeah, I don't know.
He skipped out on Monaco to race at Indy just to escape McLaren Honda. Just to end up in a Honda where, guess what happens? His engine blows in the final 20 laps of the Indy 500. You can't script this.
Yes. I mean, even if you don't care, just the pettiness of all those people involved... I mean, you got like teammates who are just like trying to wreck each other.
Yeah, it's not as good as Rosberg and Hamilton last year, absolutely wanting to kill one another as teammates. But it's Formula One is just great for the amount of upper class pettiness you can't get anywhere else in sports. Like, you think the NBA...
Yeah, I mean, all these guys you'd, like, want to punch, just, like,
yeah, you,
on
you
a regular, like, a daily basis.
But, I mean, you think the NBA has enough pettiness? You haven't seen Formula One. NASCAR's been pretty good, too, lately, but that's another thing for another day. I mean, NASCAR just watch because it's decent, but Formula One you watch just because they hate watching every competitor and how much you want to hate all of them. And NBC's commentators... just, like, completely rip on everybody as well throughout the races, which is great as well. So, there's that. Baseball, forget about. Wait till September.
I haven't watched a NASCAR race in my entire life, but I think I'm going to watch the Coke Zero 400 on Saturday because my fantasy football league is using that to determine our draft order for this year. Where they're assigning people to cars randomly, and whoever's car.
Oh boy, Daytona, that's going to be so random.
There's a 1 in 2 chance the guy you get assigned wrecks within the first 5 laps.
Right, so then I'll get the last pick.
Yeah, it'll likely be Jimmy Johnson who will either win or crash because Jimmy Johnson is no in between at restricted play tracks.
And Jimmy Johnson is like, you know, your neighbor who's just like the really annoying dad. Who just, like, gets
so
his kids
awesome.
Everything, and you just want to punch him in the face, because he's, like, a good dad, but he just gloats about it way too much.
Yeah, Jake and I have an entire meme on our DMs about Jimmy Johnson, the cool neighborhood dad. If Jake and I ever do an offshoot sports podcast, that is going to be our entire NASCAR segment on a weekly basis.
He's just too good of a father. It bothers me.
Alrighty, so that is just about that.
Perfect way to end.
Yes. So
someone is too good of a father.
So as usual, you can subscribe to us. Thanks, Adam and Jake, for joining aboard. Chris will be back in the next one. I'm taking a personal hiatus next week. So if there's any new crosscasts that... Okay, I'm going to say this criteria that have been recorded this week. I might have something in the chamber that I'm recording in the upcoming days. It is not the Women's Lacrosse podcast because, sorry, that's...
Damn, of course it's not.
But
I really thought this one was going to be the one.
That might come after 4th of July weekend. I'm just saying
I really thought today was going to be the day.
Show yourself!
Miss Costello, anytime you're ready. But otherwise...
Well, that got dark quickly.
But no, but there's
Lion knows women is okay. So.
No, but there's a different pet.
That's the high point of crosscast history.
Yeah. It was the comparison of presidential candidates and which team they would coach.
No, you shrieking. I know women.
It's
unparalleled.
Alrighty, but anywho, there's a different pet project that I will be announcing in the upcoming days. That is going to be a fun little thing for the off season. So keep an eye out on that.
It's all Ryan's friend.
We got a special one.
Yeah,
with
nepotism.
Coming up soon. So, we got another good one.
Nepotism.
Yes. But no, we do have another one in the chamber that Jake's arranging. Actually, two. One that Safe's arranging, one that Chris is arranging. So be on the lookout for that.
Yes, I'm going to like nail Nadlin, find Nadlin the first week I move in and just like interrogate him over this.
Yes.
With your press hat.
No, but
a fedora with like a business card that says press on top of it.
I'm arranging to find
like,
that.
You have to talk to me, Sean. I go to the school now.
No, but Chris has something MLL related that's going to be pretty awesome pretty soon. So be able to have Chris on that. Joke.
Is it Paul Rabel?
We're getting there.
His best new friend.
If it's Rabel, I'll listen. If it's Rabel, I'll listen.
We're getting there
with
Rabel.
I could just, like, message Paul Rabel on Twitter and be like, what up, it's a Hopkins boy. Come on our pod. He'll probably do it. He loves that stuff. He loves social media.
But
best ambassador of the sport. We said this on this crosscast several times. Rabel, we would love to have him on here.
We'll have to plug Pizza Hut, though.
Yes, definitely Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut, please sponsor us.
Pizza, call us if you need a sponsor.
Or Sheets. Yeah, Sheets has been, like, on social media with us all the time. So. Anywho, podcast.
Shout out to our rebranding. Best rebranding in SB Nation history.
First off, subscribe to us, College Crosscast, on iTunes or Google Play. Social media, follow me at RyanMcD29. Follow Safe
at ATVS underscore Jakenzar.
Adam.
Follow me at A. Epstein.
He's very
I am at Erie underscore Barrister, the main account. Is now at CosCross. Oh, College underscore Cross.
Yes, College underscore Cross. We're not Sexy Time Lax anymore. And now that we're breaking news and all that stuff,
it's cleaner now. All of our social medias are identical now. That's,
streamlined. Instagram.
It died for our sins. it died for our sins.
There's also Facebook.
It's a great show. Chris, we love you. We'll talk to you soon. Good job at Nebraska, by the way.
Yes.
I always loved the idea of us kind of joking about Chris and him getting really mad as he's listening in the KYW News Radio 1060 studios. So.
Chris takes enough L's on social media, so let's not pile on. otherwise, have a great 4th of July weekend. If we don't see you since then, stay safe. But
happy birthday, America!
Happy birthday, America! Happy 150th birthday, Canada, too. Justin Trudeau definitely having this awesome barbecue that's not going to live up to the hype because it's just Trudeau, but hey, he looks like he played lacrosse at McGill and was their secretary, so go with him.
Justin's your cool teacher, you know, not like those regular teachers. He's the cool one who sits in the
chair. He's not a good one. He's just cool.
So happy birthday, Canada! Happy birthday, America! Otherwise, from all of us here at College Crosscast, enjoy your holiday weekend. And stay hydrated.
Take care, everyone.